No devil or heretic can approach him. Descending to the farthest depths of the sea, he is not to be seen even by the Buddha's eyes. Even if your eye is like a shooting star and your spirit is like lightning, you are still like a turtle, which cannot avoid dragging its tail. At such a juncture, what do you do? See the following. Main subject. Ryu Tetsuma came to Isan. Isan said, "Old female buffalo, so you have come." Tetsuma said, "Tomorrow there is a great festival at Taisan. Will you be going?" Isan lay down and stretched himself out. Tetsuma went away. Secho's verse. Riding an iron horse, the general entered the double-walled fortress. The imperial proclamation, the six kingdoms are at peace. Still gripping the golden whip, he urges the returning troops. In the quiet depths of the night, no one goes with him through the king streets. What an honor, an humbling honor, to get to speak to all of you again. Some of you know already that my root teacher is back in New Jersey, Kurt Kankan Spellmeyer. And Genjo Osho was so kind to name me at the beginning. Some people came to me asking questions about Sasheen, thinking I've been at Choboji for a long time maybe, but I'm really a guest here, and it's so kind of Genjo Osho to include me in a way that people feel they could approach me for any questions. But my root teacher trained with Kangan Webb Sensei that Genjo Osho was talking about yesterday, who was the founder of Seattle Zen Center. And I've trained with him since 2001, and in 2013, when he gave me permission to teach and I moved to Boulder, I started venturing out and sitting with other sanghas. And I think my first sesshin with Genjo Osho was 2 years ago, Rohatsu 2015. Where I met some of you. So I just wanted to start with a story of how I first met Kangan Glenn Webb, which was actually just a month and a half ago. All these years of training with Kurt, we exchanged a lot of emails with Webb every now and then, very frequently, in last few years, but I had never met him. And we all have an image of a person we have not met, especially Zen. There is just so much, just like a mystical aura, and sometimes there might be some misunderstanding. You feel scolded. You are a student from a different culture. But when I first showed up at his door, I had literally not taken shower for 3 days because my husband and I had been camping for a while. We were in Joshua Tree, done some rock climbing, dirty, stinky. We showed up, and I felt completely uncaught when I showed up at his door. And he's like this very famous Japanese art historian. And I learned from Carolyn later on that Genji Osho and Carolyn have frequented that place often. So, you know, I peeked into his place and I looked at my clothes. My shoes are messed up. My husband and I are looking at each other. Our car is clumsy and dirty. And he just welcomed us with open arms. I will not spend too much time on it, but it was such a beautiful feeling. I felt like between my husband, me, Carol, which Glenn's wife, and Webb himself, we were like four butterflies. It was just so sweet. It was like grandfatherly, you know, finding a grandfather you had heard about. In some ways, very different from the image I had in mind of him. He told us many stories. My husband also practices Zen. He told us many stories related to his work, many of his students. Each of the stories of his students that he would share, he has an amazing memory, you know, photographic memory. Coming from where I am, where I forget the person I met 5 minutes ago, his memory is photographic. So he would go into these minute details about everyone, and it just sincere connection came through. One of the first things he told me when we had gone over our initial fluttering and sort of gushing over meeting each other after all these years, he sat me down and he said, "I have a sad news. I don't think I can imitate that expression right." He said, "Genji Osho's mother has passed away." Just in the first half an hour that I met him, I don't think I can convey it fully. It was a powerful moment for me, which shouted deep and sincere connection with Genji Osho. And so I think I am here, I'm enjoying and learning and cherishing these experiences with all of you, because the root is that deep and sincere connection. So in the con today, I wanted to explore, offer just a few things that both Genji Osho and Rinzan have already sort of spoken about. You know, when Rinzan was talking about on the second day, he mentioned two very crucial, important motivations for our practice, right? Suffering. A lot of us, especially in Zen tradition, Rinzai Zen tradition, which is like so, in some ways, masculine, and it's like you have to sit, cross your legs, and be ready for that physical intensity. We are ready for it because we are facing pain, you know, in different ways. So suffering, yes. And Zen tradition uses it so well. Pain, physical pain and emotional pain, to cut through the BS and go to the heart of the teachings. And then curiosity. Koans are designed to, you know, just excite us, make us curious, just sort of go after our discriminating minds, activate it, yeah? You know, they use it. So both suffering and curiosity, it's used very well in Zen tradition. In one of his remarks, Genji Osho was talking about service, service can be a motivation, especially in later years of our life when we have tasted mu, shunyata. Service becomes a motivation, and it should become a motivation. And I want to say more about, explore what that has meant for me, and also explore another aspect of it that really also speaks to me a lot, coming from India. And then we'll also talk about this koan, I promise. So talking about what do I mean by love as a motivating factor? I'm not talking about the love that we feel. For example, I was talking about this connection, this deep, sincere connection between Kenji Osho and Glenn Webb. I feel deep, abiding love for my root teacher, Khan, Kurt Spellmeyer. I'm talking about just plain love of Mushin. Sometimes I feel the outer form of Zen, we don't explore that or talk about that enough. What do I mean? So I'm going to read you a poem by Indian Bhakti movement poet. It's called Kabir. Bhakti movement, bhakti, the word bhakti means devotion. Okay? So the poem is entitled Abode of the Beloved. Okay? O companion, my friend, that abode is unmatched where my complete beloved is. In that place, there is no happiness or unhappiness, no truth or untruth, neither sin nor virtue. There is no day or night, no moon or sun. There is radiance without light. There is no knowledge or meditation, no repetition of mantra or austerities, neither speech coming from the Vedas or books. Doing, not doing, holding, leaving, all these are lost too in this place. No home, no homeless, neither outside or inside. I'm stopping in between, but I hope you are hearing where it's going. Does it not sound like Heart Sutra? In our sutra books in Boulder, the little sangha that we have in Boulder, I've placed this next to the Heart Sutra because it's just so beautiful. It reveals a lot. It reveals a lot to me. It's not just talking about the deep, deep, deep dark moon, but it's also talking about the big circle that holds the form and no form in some way. So I wanted to bring in Kabir here because he was a poet, mystic poet, from the Bhakti movement. And the title of the poem tells you about that movement. The title is Abode of the Beloved. So, Mu, Shunyata, God, whatever name we use for that, was referred to as beloved. Not the teacher that is teaching, not necessarily the path, although path and, you know, the goal and the path are one in some way, but thinking about that state of mind as a friend, as a beloved, as a mother is very common in Bhakti movement mystics, right? And that was like a reaction to just the crazy caste system and ritual that exists in India to this day, right? It's like cut through all these steps and rituals I'm going to commune with my God directly, and I'm going to have a very intimate relationship with that state of mind without any intervening things, right? So my beloved, okay? And I think that for me, revisiting poems like this after doing Zen training for many years was like, oh, I'm allowed to embrace the feminine, right? It's wonderful to think about Manjushri's word, okay? You have a thought, another thought, and then there is this imagery that state of mind that I can rest there, that's my friend, that's my mother, that's my beloved. I hope that makes some sense, right? We have this fighter spirit, and sometimes it's especially hard I don't know if it's necessarily more hard for women, but it could be for women to always relate to that cutthroat masculine spirit of Zen. So let's go to the woman protagonist of the koan here. She doesn't do too much, but she sets the scene. Ryu Tetsuma came to Isan, right? She's known as a fierce Zen teacher. You always have to be on guard around her. And Isan said, "Old female buffalo, so you have come." Yeah, so the Isan, actually Isan was called a buffalo himself, and so they must share a very deep friendship, that in that they can kind of, you know, be pals with each other in that way. "Old female buffalo, so you have come," Tetsuma said. "Tomorrow there is a great festival at Taisan, huh? Are you coming?" And Isan lay down and stretched himself out. And Tetsuma went away. As I was so grateful, Genjo Osho was talking about different ways of doing koans yesterday. My root teacher Kurt's style is quite different from Genjo Osho, and that's why I'm learning a lot from Genjo Osho, because they are such different styles. But you know, in some deep way, a lot of the koans, in spite of all the outer wrappings of Zen, which seems so masculine, so driven, in, you know, charged, in control, rigorous form, there is just deep feminine, yeah, joy as well. When we first find that joy and peace, and if I may say so, just a little bit getting drunk, it's like, ah, right? And it's interesting when we first encounter that drunkenness, so to speak. I go back to that sort of drunkenness, because that's the drunkenness also which is part of the poem I just read. Calling that state of mind beloved, right? And I'm sort of just inviting all of us, especially women, to remember that Zen absolutely always has place for feminine. It took me a lot of time to understand that. What do I mean by that? So, you know, women's bodies are different. Our center of gravity is going to be different, right? Every month, women might shed half an organ when they go through their moon. When I was a young Zen student, you know, sit in full lotus, go get through it all. You know, you had an image. If you are a senior, serious student, everyone sitting in full lotus, you know, do your legs, full lotus. I discovered that when I was going through my moon and I sat in full lotus, it darn gave me a lot more pain, and I would be in that pain for many more days, even after Sasheen. It's like I had no one to turn to, because the teachers and other people around were men. And I went through many years like that, and then eventually I asked Kurt, can you put me in touch with a female teacher? And then he did. He put me in contact with Wendy Nakao, abbot of Zen Center in Los Angeles. And I exchanged a few emails with her, and I thought, I was not insane. I just didn't have a role model in, you know, thinking about some of these things and thinking me needing to take care of myself has no place in Zen tradition. I mean, I had made a story in my head that somehow I always had to conform to this way of doing practice, this way of being at Sasheen, and this way of doing Gyaza or not. And in some ways, I have to even remind myself even today that honoring my truth is okay, even though something else is the tradition. I have very severe chronic Lyme disease. I could go on and on about it, but I'll just tell you one thing, and it will tell you how severe it is. In 2013, my right leg was paralyzed neurologically for 2 years because of Lyme. And even at that time, 11, my leg was paralyzed, and I lost control over my right leg, so I couldn't flex it anymore. And it happened in part because I was sitting in full lotus all the time. And even when it happened, then I still wasn't clear why it was happening, and diagnosis was still going on. I kept going to all sessions and still somehow propping myself up and sitting in full lotus. On some ways, I say, good job, you were sincere. But on the other side, foolish, admirable foolish. What am I trying to say here? I love my practice. Mosheen is my beloved friend. I love my teachers, I respect my teachers. I so enjoy everything I learn from them, and I'm so grateful. But my beloved is Mosheen. But sometimes conforming to a form, a style, I have not honored myself. I have not viewed maybe Mosheen as a friend who I can come back to after I have taken rest. But it's like somehow I have to fight myself into conform into a role, fight into remaining in a position. And I was so happy when I came here that Genjo Osho, especially when we do Sasheen's back at Choboji, there is a body practice. That is wonderful. That was like great, wonderful. There is place for honoring the feminine. And yet it takes reminder. It takes reminder to come back to that place where I can say, I can honor both myself and my beloved friend Mosheen both at the same time. Yeah? Changes the attitude towards practice. Okay. So I hope the love part came through, and honoring ourselves because we love our beloved Mu came through. The second thing that I wanted to talk about, explore, was service. And for that, I have another thing to read you, which is translation of this book, which is my absolute favorite. I keep it with me all the time. It's in Hindi. It's called Mahaguha and Me Pravesh. Mahaguha means deep, deep, dark cave. A little bit like Genjo Osho's name. It's written by Vinoba. Vinoba Bhave was Dharma heir of Mahatma Gandhi. You wouldn't have heard of him, but when Gandhiji offered any civil disobedience, any kind of action, Vinoba was his first warrior on the front lines, so to speak. And he was the one who trained the longest and the hardest in terms of meditation practice. So one couldn't just go into civil disobedience, just because these days you want to oppose fracking, coal, or even people were going up to Standing Rock, you get half day training and you can go, maybe 2 days, maybe a week. For Gandhi, you had to train for many years. And Vinoba was his like foremost student. So this is translation of a one short paragraph from him. I say that the free mind is like a deep blue sky. I know that Genki used to use this phrase, deep blue sky. Vast from outside, shunya within, shunya or zero within. Sky faces wind, dust, rain, but it doesn't get touched by it. Sky gives pause and vacation to all of these elements. My thinking and analysis of problems is constantly on, but that thinking doesn't touch me. This state of mind is the state of mind of a free, liberated mind. We must all enter the deep, dark cave. We must look at our global problems from the point of view of that cave. We must maintain a little distance from our work, our ego, and our dear people and our dear causes. If we do that, we reach a place that is fundamental source of absolutely everything. This is the place from where all the world, all life, all universes begin. This is also the place where mind itself ends, but something remains. Some call it Sat, Asat. There are some Hindi phrases here. God. People might visualize and comprehend it according to their cultural and political circumstances, but in the end, it is just that. Just is. Mool Srot, that's a Hindi word again, which means just the basic source of everything. If we reach there, our minds will have contentment, clarity, joy. This is a matter of experience, not imagination. When we reach the space, we become separate from our moving minds. We just need so much more of these minds. Kenjo Osho was saying, I think on the first Teisho, the times that we live in say that we mean that we should be ready to die. Yeah. One of the ways that traditionally faith based institutions, organizations have shown up for service is what I call the dolphin phenomena. I just made that word up, by the way, dolphin phenomena. But so I heard it from a friend from Shambhala tradition, Adam Lobel. You know, a few years ago, you might have heard there was a spill. BP spill in Gulf, yeah? And you just imagine there was just these thousands and millions of gallons of dark, dark oil that covered. The imagery shudders me up. It covered dolphins. It covered all birds, little whales, all everyone. The dead birds were showing up, and these birds that are alive, fish, but they could no longer move because it's like there's oil all over. And people from faith-based institutions showed up on the shores. It's like, take one dolphin. And it's like, okay, go, my love. Another one, clean. Okay. One by one. And my friend Adam Lobel said, we have to stop doing that. In one way, we are just showing up for what is present in front of our eyes, which is birds, one bird at a time, one moment out of time, at a time. You show up, clean the bird, and let it go. Release it in cleaner waters. We have to start asking, why does the oil spill again and again? Why are there systems in place that, you know, if we are going to keep moving the oils and frack, gas, all of these things, they're going to spill. There are big systems in place. The point is, when I think about service, I feel like this is my... has to be limited understanding and feeling, but my feeling is strong at this point. It might change in the future, that as communities, as Buddhist communities, we are very good at dolphin phenomena. We are not good, we have not gotten our act together to look at the institutional power. Quakers are very good at it. I was so thrilled. Carolyn was telling me how involved Genjo Osho and her have been with the Quakers. But Quakers don't necessarily always have the state of mind that Vinoba was talking about, that I just read for you. There needs to be this marriage of the systematic understanding of why coal and oil spills and fracking keep happening from an institutional point of view with the spiritual power that that long training can bring. And It's just my urge, a deep urge, deep calling. I spoke about this last time we were together, that we find a way without activating a discriminating mind too much. I know, bringing these issues to a Rohatsu session, I felt a degree of nervousness. You know, this is our time to go deep. This is our time really to go deep, not just for our own selves, for our own suffering and curiosity, and really sort of getting at our koans, these wild, beautiful, wacky, amazing koans, but also to serve. But we want to serve a little bit strategically, a little bit beyond the dolphin phenomena. We should not stop working on one dolphin at a time, but we have to absolutely also, from my point of view at this point of time, we need this urgent marriage. I mean, you know, Genji Osho was saying the other day, 200 years from now, Buddhism in America might change. This is the form we have today, and it might change in 200 years. My feeling is that what kind of country and planet will we have in 200 years if we do not act up strategically? With this fierce compassion, fierce clarity, fierce spiritual depth, and strategic understanding of the causes, the deep underlying causes of where we are. I guess what I'm saying is, I feel that Buddhism and Buddhist communities need to transform sooner, not in 200 years. In what way? I am not 100% clear, but in some way that maintains the core of our deep practice, so that we all reach this place where all life begins, where the worlds end and also begin, right? Where we access the clarity and joy and contentment and this sort of drunkenness. We can't go forward. I still get bitter and arrogant and lost. Before coming to Sasheen, we were planning this huge anti-fracking campaign in Boulder. It induces fear. It induces all kinds of emotions. I am just so grateful to have deep practice. We shouldn't lose that, but that practice by itself is not... this is just my humble feeling, that if that practice is all our wise and compassionate Buddhist communities are offering to the world at this time, in 21st century, we might not be meeting our full potential. I want to apologize in advance if this doesn't sound right, and I take comfort in the fact that Genji Osho would skillfully correct the course, as they say, if this doesn't feel right. But if our deepest vow is to serve all beings, and we can never fully meet bodhisattva vows, right? We all know that. But there has to be a way in which deep spiritual practice meets strategic training. And also strategic training for two things. One, in saying no, right? in saying like nonviolent direct action, in showing up at the site where wrong is happening. No! And in another way, saying yes. Yes to the systems that create alternative to how our economy functions today. What do I mean by that? I'll finish quickly. We have this amazing, beautiful session here, right? I'm sitting half the time drunk and sitting half the time feeling gratitude for wonderful food, wonderful space, the farm and the ritual. You know, I come in at first, it's like I can't remember where to bow. And then fourth day, bows just flow naturally, okay? So there's gratitude and drunkenness. But then I go back. Most of us go back to our jobs, to our commute, to our everything, which is just so embedded in the status quo economic system that causes great pain to all beings, right? So when I say we need yes and we need no, no is, most people understand no, but the yes is creating economic systems within our communities, within our neighborhoods, which sort of extricate themselves from the mainstream system. So it's just my humble, I guess it's just an ask and a question, how do we do that? I hope we will keep exploring that because as wonderful as it is to show up for, I'm always excited to see photographs of friends, Dharma friends, showing up at gatherings, rallies, and it's important for solidarity and our own sense of saying, I'm not alone in feeling sad about these issues. But those rallies don't change much. They don't take power away from economic systems. So, I guess if I'm saying get drunk, let's get drunk. Let's get drunk on our beloved. Let's please do that. If you can do Yaza, do that. I cannot. If I do Yaza, I will really, really get sick. I was quite sick last night. I had to leave early. I don't always get it right, but I'm trying to honor myself. Just honor that. While I get drunk with my beloved Moo, and I'm saying, let's also strategize as we get drunk.